from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. We will continue in this hour to discuss the State of the State address delivered by Governor Jerry Brown this morning, and you can join us for our post-speech analysis and reaction to the governor's remarks. And we want to hear from you. Did the governor address your biggest concerns, and what are your biggest concerns? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. In a State of the State address this morning, California Governor Jerry Brown talked about the need for fiscal discipline, and he discussed pensions, education, the drought crisis, climate change, among other issues. In this hour, we want to hear about the State of the State from the perspective of you, our listeners. We just heard analysis in the last hour in the California report, but did you agree with the governor's assessment, and what did he leave out? You can call us now. The number, 866-733-6786, or email us with any questions or comments you might have or your assessment of the governor's speech. Email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can post right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, or our Facebook page. But again, we're asking you questions. Do you agree with the governor's assessment of the State of the State, and what do you feel he left out? Our toll-free number again is 866-733-6786. We have with us ongoing analysis John Myers, political editor at KXTV in Sacramento, former Sacramento bureau chief for KQED News, joins us from the state capitol. John Myers, welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. We also have Chris Haney with us, executive director of the California Budget Project, who's also with us from the state capitol. Chris Haney, welcome to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, and we will be joined shortly, we hope, by Jessica Calafati, the politics and state government reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, who is also based in Sacramento. And John Myers, I was struck sort of initially by the levity that the governor came out with and his tone. It was kind of a philosophical tone. Life is uncertain. Life is local. Go back to Genesis and Santayana. But he also took a blast early on. I just want to get this on for the record and get your response to it, to people like Dan Walters and Joe Matthews, who've been saying, look, we shouldn't have a state of the state. It may be constitutional, but we should be doing these local kind of all 12 district meetings with the governor.
Yeah, I noticed that too, Michael. I mean, I think that some of that is kind of the paradox inside Jerry Brown a little bit. I mean, at some point he says, whatever, with circumstance, with ceremony. I don't really like it. It's no big deal. I'm not interested in this stuff. You know, I'll do whatever I want to do. I don't need all the frugalities the trappings of office. And then at the same time, he very much does like the ceremony and those kinds of things. And he hearkened back to his father delivering the State of the State, and he remembered being in the chamber. I think the governor believes that the speech
is in his sacerdotal robes.
Yes, I believe the governor thinks that these speeches are a way to set a tone. But I don't think he thinks they're more than that. Some governors have made these huge policy pronouncements in these speeches. Brown doesn't think that, but he clearly thought it had value.
Yeah, and I thought also it was interesting early on when he gave a gracious thanks not only to the legislators but to the citizens of California for Prop 25 and 30, in a way maybe saying, well, there may be another thing to vote on that I would like you to do, come along with.
Yeah, I think that the one of the great narratives of Jerry Brown returning to the governorship here in California has been his very keen sense of where the public is and not wanting to get out in front of the voters. He does want to lead them, but he doesn't want to get out too far in front of them. And he's tailored a lot of the things I think he's done in office to where he thinks the voters are on issues. And, yeah, I think that was an acknowledgement that he believes they are a partner, and he's going to continue to make sure he's in the right place. Although, having said that, there's some issues that he's pushing that you know, the polls show he's going to have to make a huge case on, whether it's the Delta Tunnels project for water or high-speed rail. But, you know, by and large, the governor wants the voters right there close to him, and he's got the best thermometer, I think, of voters in California of any politician.
And the former mayor of Oakland certainly put a lot of emphasis on local control, not only local control funding formula, and I want to hear a quick cut on that, but also local control of education and local control of the prisons with realignment. Let's hear the governor on school funding, which was a topic that came up, stressing the importance of local, especially with local control funding formula, which was enacted last year.
Instead of prescriptive commands issued from headquarters here in Sacramento, more general goals have been established for each local school to attain, each in its own way. This puts the responsibility where it has to be, in the classroom and at the local district. With 6 million students, there's no way the state can micromanage teaching and learning in all the schools from El Centro to Eureka, and we shouldn't even try.
Yeah, message pretty clear there, John, and also talking about, as far as education, bringing the new Common Core standards into work as well.
Yeah, I think the quip for me, Michael, in the speech that really set, that really, I think, encapsulated Brown was he said we should never lose sight of the reality that life is local. And I think he is a constant reminder for legislators here that they should not over prescribe what happens in California.
Well, you have that cut, John? Excuse me, Danny? Danny has it. Let's hear it.
And all this, your legislative work, particularly funding, is crucial. But we should never lose sight of the reality that life is local and that so many things we try to do here in the state capitol can only be handled by local representatives and leaders or the people themselves. These problems that we face, they deal not with abstractions, the abstractions of the law, but with flesh and blood reality of everyday life. That's a lesson I learned as mayor of Oakland.
That was Governor Jerry Brown, again, from his speech this morning. And Chris Haney is executive director of California Budget Project. Chris, I know you were listening very carefully to this speech to find out if there was, well, a blueprint on the economy and the state's role in fostering economic development. Did the governor come through for you on that?
No, not really. It was a very celebratory speech, celebrating successes that the governor has every right actually to celebrate after what he's been through in his tenure here this second time around, his fiscal stewardship of the state, restructuring education finance, expanding Medi-Cal, the increase in the minimum wage this past year, granted, depending on your perspective, realignment of corrections, that sort of thing. For the governor, from the governor's perspective, much to celebrate there. But the speech didn't have very much in it that was looking forward, that was presenting a vision for a broader and more broadly shared economic prosperity that was focused on jobs and economic development. He mentioned 1 million jobs having been created, but that still leaves us well short of where we were prior to the recession. And he talked a lot about a so-called state surplus, which is really unanticipated revenues that have come from voter passage of Proposition 30, an economic recovery that's been particularly poignant at the high end of the wealth scale, and from historical spending levels that are pretty low. And so those unanticipated revenues still are in question here. What do you want to do with them? What's this blueprint for the future? And in terms of the speech sort of setting a tone, it was fairly tone deaf in terms of what it might do for people, families, and communities.
Well, there have already been some broadsides from Democrats about how poverty was left out of this, and we'll talk some more about it. But we do want to hear from you, our listeners, and we're going to hear from you in just a moment. I just wanted to, and by the way, if you have an assessment of the governor's state of the state or if you have any questions or comments, you can join us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. I want to get you on the record just on one other thing here, if I could, Chris, and that is on pensions. He mentioned the $300 billion owed, and he raised the issue, but there really were no forthcoming solutions. There's been a lot of attention because of Chuck Reed, and it's even national attention, Mayor of San Jose and his plans with respect to pensions. But the down the line, again, the governor doesn't seem to really have a formulated plan.
Right. In his budget proposal that he released back 10 days or so ago, he addresses it in the sense of identifying the unfunded liabilities and saying we need to have a plan and saying that we'll start working on aspects of this, particularly the teachers' retirement system in 2015-16. But the budget proposal and the plans for this year for the governor don't include any sort of specifics in that regard. So on the one hand, that the even signaling that there might be some addressing of this issue hasn't been in prior budget proposals. So the signaling that we're going to do something about this in the future is significant. And on the other hand, there still aren't any specifics plans-wise. I think you have to take a sort of political view of this as well, acknowledging that this is an election year and the governor and a lot of other folks aren't going to be wanting to talk about changes in pension systems in the middle of an election year.
Well, let's hear your responses. In fact, our first caller is from Sacramento. Warren, join us. You're on.
Oh, thank you very much. Quick and simple, I'm 65. I went to college during Jerry Brown's first two administrations. I've been profoundly grateful my whole life for the education the voters of the state of California provided me, and I'm completely bewildered that he remains so incredibly silent on the topic of providing a high-quality public education for middle-class kids out of middle-class families. Any response that your commentators would have, I'd appreciate.
Yeah, John Myers.
Well, I think a couple of things. I mean, I do think that has been a big issue over the last few years here, and higher ed has suffered a lot of cuts during the budget crisis. A couple of things I would point out. First, the Speaker of the Assembly, John Perez, led this effort last year that the governor ultimately embraced for a new scholarship program for middle-class kids in California to go to the UC and CSU system, money out of the state budget that will cost the state money. That program is being implemented. The governor's budget proposes more money for the UC and CSU systems than they got last year, though not as much as they wanted. And interestingly enough, while we were just talking, Michael, the new president of the UC system, Janet Napolitano, issued a statement that saying she is making cutbacks in administrative costs at the UC, with mindful that people think that we need to do something about the cost of college for kids in California. And the governor is actually attending the UC Regents meeting this afternoon in San Francisco, where I bet he'll talk about it again. I think the governor knows it's there. I agree with the caller that it may not have been his priority, and that's a good debate. But I think you'll hear more about it. I do think it's an issue that has salience around California when we talk about who's winning, who's losing as the economy struggles to recover.
Let me get another caller on. Ann, that's you. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. I actually maybe cared a little less about the address than previous governors because I feel like Governor Brown's doing a good job all along, and he's been working really hard. So I guess if I had a wish list item to ask, I would have liked to see a more creative proposal, you know, something maybe like a, you know, a micro-business initiative, something I've been asking of my representatives, you know, something that would lower the barriers to micro-entrepreneurs to start corporations. You know, it would help the young and traditional disadvantaged groups like the disabled to, you know, feel like they could practice or get their foot in the door and start corporations and gain experience running them. I think it could be good for our economy. I just would have liked to have seen, you know, something creative like that, you know, since we know he's doing such a good job and, you know, there's nothing new in his speech.
All right. And I thank you for the call. And we're getting a number of responses along the lines of what perhaps the governor should have included, like Ann's response. I'm looking at a tweet from EdSource. They're a nonprofit organization that works on behalf of education. And the tweet says, Brown didn't mention the expanded transitional kindergarten plan proposed by the Senate that would create universal pre-kindergarten. And I suppose there are many of you who may want to state things that you felt should have been in the speech, and it's an opportunity for you to do that. Joe says, I wonder, is the city of Oakland still enslaved with debt from Goldman Sachs because of the interest rate swap that Jerry and his sister set up? Jerry really did a number on that city, and yet Oakland still found gobs of money to pay dirty cops to assault Occupy protesters. Maybe it was Goldman money. Some strong feelings still where Governor Brown is concerned in Oakland. Another listener writes, I'm pleased that Governor Brown talked about climate change and local control. However, he should have spoken about how our building patterns contribute to gas consumption, poor health, and a lack of resilience in our communities. Again, if you'd like to add your voice to this, you certainly can, and we welcome your calls and emails. It's 866-733-6786 to join us or email us forum at kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the send this segment. I want to bring Jessica Calafatti into the discussion, just right back from a fire drill, I believe, politics and state government reporter for the San Jose Mercury News based in Sacramento. Welcome to the program. I hope there was no fire there.
No, it was a drill, thankfully, but poorly timed.
Well, we're glad to have you aboard here, and I actually had a chance to read through your response to the State of the State, and as far as things that were left out by the governor, you got a quote, I guess, from a man who seems to be opposing Governor Brown in this, and that's Neil Kashkari, who is a former U.S. Treasury official during the Bush administration. And I'm just reading what he said in the quote in your article. Governor Brown may claim a California comeback, but the truth is that he has forgotten the millions of California families who are struggling, 24 44% of our fellow Californians live in poverty. Yet how many times did the governor mention poverty in his 17-minute address? Not once. That is outrageous. Now, ironically, we were hearing that in the last hour from Democrats. Now we're hearing it from a Republican.
That's right. And yesterday, Neel Kashkari announced his candidacy for governor, and he repeated the words jobs and education over and over again. And it's sort of strange at this point that the Republican candidate for governor and some Democrats in the legislature are complaining about the same thing, that the governor's budget this year does not go very far in terms of creating new jobs for Californians that are out of work. And I think Jerry Brown's response to that, if he were to respond, is, you know, the word prudence. And he's been repeating that prudence and fiscal stability again and again. And I think Jerry thinks we can't be creating new programs until we are, as he put it, out of the woods, and California isn't yet.
Well, I know that you've paid a lot of attention, as many who have been following state politics have, to Governor Brown's plans for a bullet train. And this is something that actually, again, the Republicans seem to be supporting. The fact of the matter is he barely mentioned it at all. And to many, it seems almost like an obsession to him. And there's going to be litigation against his proposal. D.C. is probably opposed because it's a $68 billion price tag. Why do you think he just kind of cursorily went over it?
I suspect because the bullet train is in so much legal trouble right now. You know, Jerry certainly still supports the project and has said as much throughout these court decisions that have, you know, in some ways put the project on hold, though the High Speed Rail Authority would say otherwise. And it seems perhaps not the right time for Jerry to be cheering about the bullet train when, you know, there are hearings in Washington, D.C. about the federal grant agreement and whether the state is complying with it, and then the court rulings in Sacramento. You know, perhaps it's just not the right time.
Well, the governor also, if you didn't have the opportunity to hear his speech, not only talked about the importance of saving water and conserving water, he has declared a statewide drought. It's all voluntary, and let's hear what he has to say.
Right now, it's imperative that we do everything possible to mitigate the effects of the drought. I've convened an interagency drought task force, declared a state of emergency. We need everyone in every part of the state to conserve water. We need regulators to rebalance water rules and enable voluntary transfers of water. And we must prepare for forest fires. As the state water action plan lays out, water recycling, expanded storage, and serious groundwater management must all be part of the mix.
And yet, nothing perhaps from many people's perspective on that, John Myers, that would move us away from the voluntary or have some kind of task before us, series of tasks before us?
No, I there wasn't at this point. I don't think if you look at, you know, the way Governor Brown has approached the State of the State speeches in the past, I don't think he views them as some place to lay out these large new pronouncements. I mean, you know, for those of us news business, was there any news out of the speech? No, probably not. But I think, you know, he was trying to set a tone. I think the tone was somewhat serious about it. I think some people rightly can say he didn't say enough about what we're going to do to resolve the drought. But frankly, I'm not sure the governor knows what he will do. And I do think, you know, if nothing else, the experience of 1976 and 77, the state's last monumental drought crisis, probably showed him that we don't know where the weather patterns are going to go, and he wants to take it cautiously at this point. I think that's why we didn't have a mandatory conservation goal on Friday when he issued the drought order. I think there's a lot to be said on drought and water, and I do agree that the governor didn't pivot to use the drought as a way to sell the Delta tunnels or something like that, but I think he's cautious. He knows the places that the public is unhappy, and the tunnels or high-speed rail, those are two of them.
Well, we've got a rainy day fund. What we don't have is rainy days, but we need them desperately. I'm wondering, Chris Haney, about your response to something else that I believe you were anticipating and we didn't hear, and that was with all the talk about local from the governor, not anything local in terms of teacher retirement system, making that more of a local responsibility.
No, he didn't talk about that, although he's you know, put a signal out in his state budget that there's going to be a challenge coming with the legislature about what to do about the teachers' retirement system. and its unfunded liabilities, and he's signaling that in 2015-16, in the fiscal year budget proposal that he'll release next year, that there will be some sort of a plan and then an agreement need to be reached with the legislature that brings things back into line. But he also, you know, on a number of fronts, including the rainy day fund, he has proposals out there that are sort of focused on longer-term aspects. On the other hand, when it comes to this life is local quote from his speech, there isn't a lot here that actually invests locally. And building for the future, another quote from the governor, would do more in that regard. He's setting up some false choices here about sort of saving money versus investing as if it's sort of a black and white scenario, and there's room even in his own projections to do both.
Yeah, I was also struck that he didn't mention the water bond. And again, Chris Haney is with us from Sacramento. He's executive director of the California Budget Project. And you certainly can join us if you have some analysis of your own about the state of the state or an assessment of it, or if you have a question or comment. We do welcome your involvement. You can go to our Facebook page. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum, or you can join us by phone. Toll-free number 866-733-6786. Allegra writes, hi, well, I think it's good to start paying down the debt and starting a rainy day fund. We also need to start investing more money in the social services, which have suffered from many cuts over the past years. Once again, the poor and disabled have been forgotten. And we're hearing that refrain, not only, as we said, from the likely candidate who's opposing Jerry Brown, but also from a number of the Democratic legislators. Chris Haney?
Yeah, I think it's important for the governor to remember that political memories are short here. You know, he's had a good track record over the last few years in terms of fiscal stewardship, managing the state through a very deep recession. But it's time for him to put a blueprint forward that's about positioning the state for growth, and that includes doing something in terms of helping those folks who are still struggling to make ends meet coming out of the recession. Our economic recovery is very uneven. There's wide variation across the state in unemployment levels, long-term unemployment, poverty levels. And both his budget proposal and this speech today said very little in that regard. And I think he's going to have to put something on the table to sort of show the voters in California that he's on that issue just the way he wants to be on the drought issue, just like he wants to be on the liabilities issue.
Let me bring another caller aboard here. Carrie, thanks for joining us. You're on the air on Forum.
Hi. I just wanted to comment about the paradigm of the bark if you don't like debt versus poverty issue. I mean, he did mention the minimum wage, but I agree that dealing with the root issues and the fundamental issues of the massive inequality that hasn't been at this level since the years leading up to the Great Depression, looking at the things that really need to be dealt with at the federal level, but that states are going to need to be involved in, which is dealing with corporate constitutional rights and rights for artificial entities that were never supposed to be there. What the courts have done to us is wiping us out. Citizens United decision, what they potentially could do with the McCutcheon decision, and fundamentally what is causing all of our problems is the massive power that's been handed to what are supposed to be our economic development tools, and it's hurting business as well. And I think we really need to be focusing on that and pushing for that. I know the legislature did sign a...
All right, Carrie, I'm sorry. We're coming up on a break here, and it doesn't stop for anybody, including me. So I'm going to have to say goodbye to you, but I thank you for the call. And we'll take more of your calls and responses when we come back. You can read the full speech on our website. Just go to kqed.org/forum, and Governor Brown's State of the State speech is there. You can also join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're doing analysis of the State of the State speech, which was delivered by Governor Jerry Brown earlier this morning. He discussed the budget and many other matters, and we're doing some post-speech analysis, getting your reaction to the governor's remarks, and we do want to hear from you. Did the governor address your biggest concerns? What did he omit or leave out, or what should he have addressed in your judgment? You can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments or your own assessment or what you feel the governor left out right on our our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and you can actually read the speech on our website by going to kqed.org/forum. John Meyer is with us, political editor of KXTV in Sacramento, our former Sacramento bureau chief, KQED News, and Chris Haney with us also from the state capitol, executive director of the California Budget Project. We have Jessica Calafatti with us as well this hour, politics and state government reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. She's based in Sacramento and just reported on the governor's speech. And Jessica, I'd like you to hear actually a cut from the governor's speech to get your response to it. He said, even though our economic situation has improved, we're not out of the woods, as we've remarked, and listed a number of long-term liabilities.
Tens of billions are needed to cover retiree health care, more like $60 billion. And $65 billion is needed to maintain and keep our roads and our buildings and our other infrastructure in sound repair. And we must also account for future risks that could negatively affect our budgets, like congressional decisions, natural disasters, and the uncertain costs of the Affordable Care Act.
There's a lot of litany there, a whole catalog of things, Jessica. But again, this is often a speech that's addressed to the legislators and certainly to the citizens of California. What's he trying to say maybe in the subtext there? What do you glean from it?
That section of the speech reflects the same statement that Governor Brown made in his budget address, and that's that he is aware of the state's unfunded retirement and by retirement, I mean pension and health liabilities, and that he is committed to addressing these things next year. Now, Governor Brown has gotten a lot of credit for his plan to pay down the wall of debt, but these liabilities that he's mentioned, which are in the tens of billions of dollars and in total are more than $350 billion, are not being addressed in his budget this year. So I think what he's trying to say is, I'm aware of these things. I'm committed to helping the state fix them moving forward, but we can't do it right now.
Let me bring another caller on here, and TJ joins us. TJ, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call and listening to the governor's speech. And, of course, the water issue is a big thing with the drought and all that. And one concern I have that I didn't hear is addressing agricultural use of water and reducing it and taking money or using money to help the Central Valley farmers reduce their water use while maintaining their lifestyle, keeping our food local, and freeing up water that way for urban use.
John Myers, certainly people in the Central Valley may feel that the governor did not pay enough attention to them.
Well, it's going to be an interesting year on this whole thing. I mean, the drought certainly tees up the issue, right? But, I mean, we were going to talk about possibly about water bond and the Delta system of the Delta underground tunnels this year anyway. You know, the caller makes a good point. If you look at the water that goes through the Delta and goes north to south, the vast majority of it goes to agriculture. It does not go to citizens for drinking water or things like that. We're expecting out of the Brown administration soon a water action plan, some immediate steps that they want to take in 2014 to deal with the water issue. And I do think you're going to hear the governor try to figure out this balance between the needs of Californians and how they use that water. I've been struck here in Sacramento lately by how many people here have the anger of why we're sending our water to L.A. and San Diego. Well, yes, but we also have needs all through the state, and the governor has to find a way to bridge that gap. Ag, north, south, urban, rural, these are big issues.
Yeah, well, the governor talked about maybe what some people feel is the biggest issue a good deal, and that was climate change. He got more applause for that, perhaps, than anything else he delivered in the state of the state, other than saying immigrants can dream and drive now legally. But there were certainly a lot of people who were, I think, disappointed that there was nothing about fracking. And Margaret, you're one of them, so let's hear what you have to say. Margaret?
Oh, I want to just say that I think that is really a federal issue. He left it out, and it certainly is very important, but it has to be handled on a federal basis because other states are affected by this too. They've had bad experiences because of fracking, and I think it definitely needs some consideration and study. But in California, because of our drought, it's all the more important that something be done about that, regulating fracking.
Well, there's a lot of environmental concern about the effect of fracking on the groundwater, but I think, John Myers, it's safe to say the governor's made it abundantly clear that he wants more research, he wants more scientific empiricism.
I guess. I'm not sure. I think it's been abundantly clear. I think it might be a little more murky than that. I mean, the governor got himself in the middle of that crossfire on fracking last year and ultimately came out with a regulate it, don't end it strategy. But I do think he is the intense pressure. He had fracking protesters outside the state capitol after the speech this morning. And I do think that the governor is going to have to address this issue of should California find its own way. The caller makes his point about the federal debate. That is one. But this is a governor who has said often, we're going to do things we need to do if the feds won't do it. He said it on climate change. He said it on other issues. And so here's one. I mean, he's got a very big environmental community that says this is a dangerous oil drilling process. And the oil industry says we need the, you know, we need the oil. And this is a, it's a great test for the governor.
We wanted to bring some legislators into this discussion. Ted Gaines is a state senator, California's first district that covers most of the Sierra Mountain range from the Oregon border. And he's a Republican caucus chair. And Senator Gaines, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Like to get your response. We heard actually in the last hour from Assemblymember Connie Conway, and she brought up this whole issue of debt versus surplus, and I imagine to some extent that was a concern of yours as well.
Yes, and I appreciate the governor's willingness to have a rainy day fund of revenue when we come across another tough economic time. But I would also argue that we are suffering from an employment drought also in the state of California. There are hundreds of thousands of people who are underemployed and hundreds of thousands who are unemployed. And while the economy is improving, I'm not seeing it in job creation. I'm very worried about a shrinking middle class in California.
What about when Governor Brown came out early on in his speech and said there have been a million jobs since 2010?
Well, I'm not seeing it in my district. We still have double-digit unemployment in northeastern California. I've talked to other legislators that are still suffering. And you may have a job, but you may be qualified for something that could pay a much higher salary that could actually support a family.
What else would you list as perhaps not on the governor's, well, that wasn't part of his speech, it should have been?
Well, I think he covered a lot of territory. I wish he would have spoken more about the Affordable Care Act and the challenges that are being suffered by individual policyholders. We had 900,000 Californians who had their insurance canceled last year, and they had to get into the ACA, the new plan, that had some coverages that they may not have needed at much higher costs. I've literally had hundreds of constituents either email or call my office about having to pay several hundred dollars more a month for health insurance. And I thought the whole point was to drive down costs. And I don't see in the Affordable Care Act that we're doing what should be done in terms of driving costs down and providing more competition in the marketplace.
What about what some have called the anemic recovery? We've certainly got solvent again. We got rainy day surplus money, but it's still, from the perspective of, I think, many people in the GOP, too slow a pace. We need to grow the economy more and quicker.
Absolutely. I think Silicon Valley obviously is doing well, and we want to do what we can to encourage that. But I'm worried about the rest of the state, and what are we doing as legislators to be proactive in making it easier for entrepreneurs to start businesses? Why aren't we providing a tax credit or for a small business not having to pay the minimum corporate tax of $800 a year? What are we doing from a tax perspective and a regulatory environment? There are new regulations now that just went into place that create challenges for people that need to do any home improvement in terms of upgrades that are required by law. And these are very, very difficult in what I would argue is still a tough economic time.
And again, Ted Gaines is chair of the Republican caucus, state senator from the 1st District, which covers most of the Sierra Mountain Range from up at the Oregon border. Thank you so much, Senator, for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
And you take care, and we'll bring Ellen Corbett into this discussion, who's a state senator from San Leandro, District 10, represents parts of Alameda and Santa Clara County. Senator Corbett, good to have you aboard. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. There are a number of members of your party who are continuing to talk about unhappiness in terms of cuts to home care and social services and feel that the governor perhaps may not have been as responsive as they'd like to for him to have been. Comment from you?
Well, you know, I didn't hear the governor saying not to invest in services, home care, and such things. I heard the governor acknowledging very clearly that we are still in tough economic times and we must do what we can to make sure that we have the resources to provide services for people who are still struggling in this economy. He made that clear. I think the hopeful message from this is decisions that have been made in the past few years have allowed the economy and the budget to recover so that we do have the room to do what we need to do to provide the services that people depend on.
Wouldn't you have wanted, though, or certainly members of your party would have wanted, and Daryl Steinberg spoke about this in the last hour from the California report, a lot more of those spending cuts restored, particularly for the sake of ameliorating poverty and establishing a greater safety net?
Well, you know, we are just at the beginning. I think that the legislature will be focusing on doing what we can to restore some programs, and we're not done with that issue. I think, though, that we do have to look at it in a prudent way and restore programs that are important, but also, you know, make sure that we don't have the booms and busts we've had in past budget times. So I certainly do acknowledge that we do need to restore some programs, and I think we do have room for some of that.
Was there anything in the state of the state that you would have liked the governor to have covered that perhaps he did not, or maybe he should have covered more from your perspective?
Well, if we look at what he did cover, you know, he talked about the local control funding formula, which is extremely important for all our school districts, and allowing local community members to make decisions on what the needs are for their local students, and also evens out the funding for schools that have been struggling. They will be receiving more funding, so I was happy he touched on that. I was very happy that he spoke about the importance of science and technology, and particularly biotechnology, and how that is not only important to our economy, but it creates the promise for developing new cures and treatments for some very serious diseases. I think that that was extremely important focus. He did touch on green technology a bit. He talked about how we are transforming our transportation infrastructure, including, you know, building a infrastructure for electric vehicles, and we're well on our way to 1 million electric vehicles. I would have liked to have heard just a little bit more about investment in green tech. I do know in the budget that the governor announced a few weeks ago that he is interested in looking at some green technology investment. I would have liked to have heard more of that in today's speech, but I do think we have the opportunity to focus on that as the budget rolls out in the next few months.
Again, Ellen Corbett is State Senator from District 10, San Leandro, representing part of Alameda and Santa Clara County. And, Senator, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Michael.
And you can join us as well. We do have a great deal of interest in what your assessments are to the State of the State speech. In fact, let me go to some of your online comments here. A listener writes online, I'd like to see a lot more investment in local infrastructure, groundwater retention, walkable streets, Main Street improvements. If focused in low-income communities, these projects could help with the drought, business creation, and poverty. And Bernice tweets, overall, I like the sincerity of Governor Brown, and I'm really enjoying how personable and genuine he seems to be in helping California. Catherine writes, where was the reality check that full access to quality education beyond K-12 is what will move us into the future and the equally terrible drought in funding for the essential bridge to education, the California community colleges? Didn't hear much about the community colleges, but we did hear, it seems to me, some important remarks, Jessica Calafatti, on higher education from the governor.
Yes, that's right. He seems certainly committed to the state's university systems and trying to make them affordable for average Californians. And as John mentioned before, it seems we're going to be moving forward with the middle-class scholarship program, and I think Brown sees that as a vehicle to get average Californians into the classroom in the state's top colleges and universities.
And here, Chris Haney is a rather strong assessment of the governor's performance and really the governor's speech combined from a listener named David who emails the following. Has government become marginal? The striking thing about Jerry Brown's second time as governor is how marginal it is. For example, while his $25 billion water project in the Delta is useful, it seems to skirt the real problem, less and less water for more and more water users. California has made a successful transitional kindergarten in the schools, which is useful, but it doesn't address the fact that most of the kids in California public schools will not have sufficient skills to compete globally. We have a $1 billion rainy day fund, which is better than we were 3 years ago, but meanwhile, we're accruing public sector benefit obligations that will be a problem. Are there any new powerful ideas that Jerry Brown can get behind? Can Brown and Sacramento get behind a Hyperloop that goes 4,000 miles per hour versus a high-speed train that's slower and less comprehensive than those in China? Can they get behind perhaps opening the next UC campus online? Is our famous California openness to huge new ideas where we are really in deficit? If so, why? Have we and Jerry lost our edges? There's a lot packed in there, but essentially he is talking about the budget there and what the budget ought to be used for, as opposed to what he's described or characterized as marginal things, more innovative, more imaginative.
That's right.
Actually, I was going to Chris Haney on this because of the budget, but we'll come back to you, Jessica. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, there's a lot there to respond to. The one thing that I would say is that what the callers are calling marginal is, very much framed by the governor around fiscal prudence, and that was probably a much-needed and very useful frame over the last 5 or 6 years for the state, given the depths of the recession. But the measure of a budget, the measure of the state's fiscal and economic health going forward, isn't going to be just about whether the budget's in the black. It's going to be whether the budget's working for Californians. Is it creating a platform for growth and for broadly shared prosperity? And on a number of fronts, the governor's sort of early speeches here on the budget and about the state of the state have left a sort of incomplete vision on the table about where we're headed next. And I think you have to acknowledge that it's, on the one hand, there are things like rainy day funds and paying down liabilities that are good, fiscally responsible things to do, but it's also fiscally responsible to be investing in the state's communities and people who are still emerging from the recessions themselves.
And some are saying infrastructure and putting that as a greater priority. Jessica Calafatti, let me get you on record here.
Sure. I think Jerry Brown is a big dreamer, and that's evident in his support for the high-speed rail project in spite of all of its troubles. As far as, more regular infrastructure, roads, bridges, highways, he is putting some money in the budget toward that this year. But I think what Jerry Brown is starting to realize, or perhaps he realized this a while ago, is that ambitious ideas are expensive. And to dream big, as the caller described, costs quite a bit of money. And California doesn't necessarily have that money right now.
Well, given all his focus, Jessica, on local in this speech, why do you suppose he didn't even mention resuscitation of redevelopment funds? That has certainly been a big issue. It's been a big issue here on the forum program.
That's a fair point, and I can only presume that the governor feels we don't have the money for it right now. He's said that a number of times. He repeats the word prudence over and over again. And I think in spite of what some municipalities and what some Democrats would like to do with the state's funds, Jerry Brown is trying to be an adult in the room, so to speak, and really hold back, even though programs like redevelopment funds or other local infrastructure projects could be deserving of funds.
I want to go to some more of your emails and web comments. Chris Haney, here's James, who writes, it's incredible but not particularly surprising that the instant we see some light at the end of this fiscal tunnel, the voices, including a Republican, start talking about how the state needs to step up funding for this social program and that social program. Did these voices not learn anything through the past 10 years of abysmal budget management in this perpetually broke state?
Well, I think the thing you have to remember here is that there were a whole series of very dramatic cuts made in services that were emergency cuts to programs that are really core to what the state does in education, healthcare, human services. And those cuts were intended to be permanent. And there's programs and services that really help people who are struggling to emerge from the recession. They're programs that really create local jobs through economic development and investments in education and people's future. The concern here is that we sort of set the bar too low going forward in terms of what's possible for the state. Nobody's asking the governor or the legislature to put unreasonable proposals on the table, but we're looking at a governor's budget proposal that has $12 or $13 billion in the paying liabilities and saving money categories, there ought to be a couple billion dollars room in there, just to throw a number out, for some reinvestment in core programs and services that would help position people and communities for growth.
Chris, you had mentioned earlier that you thought the governor was avoiding much talk about high-speed rail for political reasons, but here's a comment from a listener named Mike who says, Brown is disappointing in his support of high-speed rail in that it seems to be no more than pork and a way to get Fed money. 80% of it will go through sparsely populated areas and not serve as practical public transit for Californians. Of course, we've had this debate back and forth on forum, but he goes on to say, better spend the money in dense areas like San Francisco and L.A. Has he avoided talking it up because it's just more pork as usual?
Well, I think he's avoiding, he probably avoided it for a number of reasons. One, there's just a lot of details that are in flux right now, both on the legal front with the funding coming out of Washington, D.C., and with how he proposes to put some dollars into that in his new budget proposal. And then there's the whole issue of the political popularity of high-speed rail being at a very low level. And so he's got a number of reasons why he probably wants to wait until he talks some more about high-speed rail.
Multi-reasons, yeah. You're listening to Forum. We're talking with Chris Haney of the California Budget Project and Jessica Calafatti, from the San Jose Mercury News. We spoke earlier with John Myers from KXTV in Sacramento and with two state senators, Ted Gaines and Ellen Corbett. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more listener responses here. Here's Doug who writes, Governor Brown completely avoided talking about the immense cost of supplying social services and Spanish language school programs to our huge illegal immigration population. Maybe, Jessica Calafatti, that's because what to do? I mean, you know, the governor doesn't have solutions to that. Why bring it up?
Right. And I don't think Governor Brown is looking to make distinctions between immigrant students who are legal and those who are illegal. But certainly he would say the local control funding formula sends more money to school districts that have large populations of students who don't speak English at home, students who are disadvantaged, and in some cases, students who are in foster care. And oftentimes those are the categories that overlap with students who are illegal immigrants. So in that respect, he would say he is helping that group.
And again, Jessica Calafatti is politics and state government reporter with the San Jose Mercury News. She's based in Sacramento. And Eric is in San Francisco. Eric, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Michael. Thanks for the program, as always. You know, there's so much I could say. It's just very frustrating to hear how, you know, we want to do so much in this state to help the poor and to help people that are needy. That's totally understandable. Everybody wants to do that. But it's a simple process. I mean, we just don't have the money. The state has barely gotten back on its feet again here, and people are already starting to want to spend more money. I mean, why can't we just learn from the past that we get some money and then we always overspend? Then recessions come, which we always do. We never have enough money at that point. Then it's a crisis again. I mean, it's as simple as having a house, you know, mortgage payment and payments that you have. If you don't have the money to pay for things, you just don't do it. And you have to have a savings account. We just don't have surpluses anymore. We're always barely paying our bills. And then we have to tax more, and we have to end up in the same cycle going back and forth. We'd love to have homes and medical care and take care of the poor and everything. But if we just don't have the money, we don't have the money. And this state is already taxed to the limit. We have no more room to tax more people with more, have more money, supposedly. I mean, I don't know if anybody's reading the ads, you know, that are coming out on national TV these days, where New York is pulling all kinds of people in with encouraging businesses to come because it's no taxes for 10 years. People will move out of the state eventually because they're sick and tired of paying for things that we can't afford and being taxed to the limit. It's as simple as that.
All right, Eric, I thank you for that call, and I'm going to go to Chris Haney, who is Executive Director of the California Budget Project. You know, Jerry Brown, Chris, has certainly been known for many years now as being provident and fiscally responsible. He talked about boom and bust. Help us through the weeds here. I mean, in terms of what was brought up by that last caller, Eric. You know, he was giving the message perhaps that Californians really need to hear, want to hear about budget restraints.
Well, and I certainly understand the passion of the caller in terms of what the state's just been through. Nobody is actually asking the governor or the state legislature or the state's decision makers in general to go down the road of unreasonable spending. But we've got a whole series of services that are at historical lows in terms of their ability to help the state grow. And that happened through emergency cuts in a abnormally and very deep recession. And we need to walk that back a little bit and over a series of years. Nobody's saying we need to make it all up in 1 year. But as the governor's budget proposal projects new revenues, unanticipated revenues going forward, there's some room to maneuver here in a responsible way that still pays down some liabilities. You can still do some things on the rainy day fund, but you have to have investment in the state as part of that equation in order for this to be a balanced and reasonable approach going forward. Now, on the tax front, there's a lot of mythology here about the state's tax system. Yes, it's disproportionately reliant upon folks at the upper end of the income scale, and that's largely because that's where California's economic growth is. But you can't just look at rates. You have to look at sort of what people are paying, the different exemptions that they get. And when you actually look at the incidence of the tax, who's paying what and what share of their income that is, it's California's low-income folks who are paying the highest income share. So I would challenge the notion that there isn't room for the state to continue to look at its tax system to flatten some of its revenue structures in some places, think about how it continues to use the income tax effectively going forward, looks at the local property tax, talks about oil and severance taxes. The state has room in that regard, and you can't just do all of this work on the spending side.
Again, Chris Haney, Executive Director of the California Budget Project, and Richard on Facebook says, I support the Rainy Day Fund. It's interesting to note that the Rainy Day Fund in the late 70s was justification for Prop 13 being passed. Hopefully, fiscal emergency funds will not be used politically again. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your calls. And thanks not only to Chris Haney, but to Jessica Calafatti from the San Jose Mercury News, John Myers from KXTV in Sacramento, and to Senators Ted Gaines and Ellen Corbett. Thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.